it's our... It's
game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Well, welcome back to the Gamers Haven podcast. On today's episode, we are going to be talking with our... we're actually joined here by our special guest, Rolling 20s.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Mr. Tracy from the forums. Who was kind enough to go to Gen Con, and you know, so I can talk to him about Gen Con, and Jeremy and Nathan can ask me questions or stare at me blankly, that sort of thing.
Like we're doing right now.
Since the All Games Considered guys did a Gen Con post-mortem, we're going to do a full-on Gen Con autopsy, I think, just to show them up, because we can. We're just going to tell you about... What my thoughts on Gen Con. Tracy, you can tell, sort of talk from your point of view as far as it being your first year at Gen Con and compare it to various other places, too. So, and then, of course, we've got a three-parter and some random encounters to go over, as per usual. But I think that's good. We will be back right after this. Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
Well, we are back, and as I said in the intro, today we're going to be talking about Gen Con 2010, sort of taking a look at everything that went on with it. Now, I was able to make it there. Jeremy and Nathan did not. Jeremy did not want to go, and Nathan could not go.
Well, and also I wouldn't be able to go anyway. So.
Well, there is that, too, yes.
Yeah, I'm not entirely certain. Actually, this year, I don't really think... I think our thought for this year is we wanted to do something other than Gen Con. Even if we could have afforded it, we would not have gone.
Alrighty then.
So,
I would... If at some point we have the money to go up as you know, reporters, that would be cool. Because then you can wander about and, you know, interview people.
Make well, yourself, and Tracy, this was your third con of the summer, of your third con ever.
Yeah.
So
you're just getting them all out of the way now.
Yes, he was saving up.
I guess so.
You're going to be so burned out on cons after this year.
Yes. Well, Tracy, what was your first impression on Gen Con when you made it there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first thing that struck me. Was I didn't think I was thinking, okay, well, this is big, but Origins was big, so I'm gonna handle this, you know. And I'm walking through the convention center and I'm seeing very similar sites, albeit with more people. And then I realized that it also takes up 5 or 6 nearby hotels.
Yes.
Yeah, it takes up 7 square city blocks.
Yeah, I mean, the convention center, the Indiana Convention Center is a similar size to the one in Columbus, so the stuff actually going on in the convention center is very similar to what I experienced in Origins.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to find all the places where you can go for events elsewhere is a more than a bit overwhelming. I mean, it was huge.
Yep. And I think all of us have at least been to Gen Con once at this point. Jeremy, have you been once or twice? Once. All right, yes. Was that that was the last year in Milwaukee, wasn't it?
I like Milwaukee.
Could have sworn you went 1 year in Indianapolis. So.
No. Becca, the first year that it was in Indianapolis was the first year I was dating Becca, and mm-hmm. that was the first time that Becca ever went. She never she never went to Milwaukee, which is kind of sad, because Milwaukee was beautiful, and the weather was nice. Unlike Indianapolis can be.
I didn't like the homeless who tried to... I don't know if they are actually homeless. The bums...
We assume that they're homeless.
The bums who tried to always just, like, get money from you. And then the crazy religious right wing.
Oh, you mean the people
that
show up?
I miss the crazy religious right wing people from Milwaukee. They're not in Indianapolis. You know,
not as bad. No, there's a couple, but not as bad.
Not nearly as bad as Wisconsin. Like, remotely as bad.
And the Trekkies.
Well, yeah, like you, Trekkies. You had the fun experience with the Trekkies.
Damn,
you can tell
Trekkies.
Us about that here in a minute if you want.
Like Ethan's, that's not canon.
That wasn't me. That was Steve Darnell, Carol's husband from AGC, told me about that.
He said, it sounds like this. I'm ashamed to be a Star
canon.
Trek fan.
That's as bad as the whole...
Yes.
No, they didn't.
No, Gen Con was a lot of fun. I don't know about you, Tracy, but I really didn't get hit much with the gamer funk.
Which is definitely a blessing.
It was surprisingly funk free.
And there were like 3 different places selling geek soap in the exhibitor hall.
That's awesome.
Oh, so, totally. I mean, I got some stuff from both DK Queen. Geek made, and actually, I've tapped my wife. We're testing the soap, and we're going to be reviewing it for Troll in the Corner. So
excellent. We do not want photos of you with soap. That's going to be far too much information.
Maybe
audio. We could do audio.
Okay, so I'm getting in the shower now.
I'm lathering up. All right, we're done here.
We're done. What happened? Oh, he took the recorder in the shower with him.
Son of a smirk.
Yes.
Rolling 20s. How many times do we have to tell you, electronics and water do not mix?
I'll remember one of these days, I promise.
Like, oh, that's how I lost my first wife.
What? Oh, that's how I lost my last computer. God. Some people just love Facebook way too much.
Toaster in the tub.
But I know we actually managed to stay at the first year you guys came up. That we stayed. I stayed at the Crown Plaza this year, which is the one with the trains and the creepy statues.
Oh,
yeah.
And we do know
pictures?
That the statue. That yes, I got some pictures of the creepy statues. In fact, while we were there, there was one place where there was like there's a guy taking a bag out of the train, like a statue of a guy. And one day it's facing the train, the next day it's facing away from the train. So I know that the staff at night have to go out and move them. Because I know if I were working there, I would do that. I would totally do that just to screw with people.
Just watch people go, the statues, they move.
Exactly. It's one of those things like, wasn't that facing the other way yesterday? Huh. And then, of course, they spread the rumor that the place is haunted and whatnot. So, I remember the first year I was out there... first year in Milwaukee, it was very everyone was really wide eyed, and wasn't the local businesses weren't ready at all.
Oh God, no, they never were. It was the same. It was the same weekend every year.
No. The first year in Indianapolis, they weren't ready for us.
I thought you were talking about Milwaukee.
They wised up after that.
I thought you were talking about Milwaukee. They were never ready in Milwaukee.
No, well, Milwaukee closed at 4 o'clock anyway.
Yeah. They did. He's not kidding.
No, I'm not. And they weren't open on Sunday at all.
Yeah.
The whole town. It was just empty.
I've been in this small town in Wisconsin. I know they, well, not that Milwaukee's small, but
even that they had that whole small town mentality.
But no, Indianapolis, the first year it was up there, was just, they were not ready for us. I mean, they were just
no
like,
idea.
I've got this guy out here who's getting pissed off, and he's dressed as a Klingon, and he's yelling at me in tongues. What do I do? Give him a room. And, you know, like, Steak and Shake ran out of fries on Thursday.
Yeah. How do you run out of fries?
Yeah. They were not prepared.
I know this year, Gen Con set a new attendance record, over 30,000 unique attendees. Just over 30. It's like 30,042, I think, something like that.
I thought they'd hit in Milwaukee higher than that.
Oh, God, no.
No?
That's why they moved it from Milwaukee. They were getting much too big for Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's too bad that Milwaukee got too small, because the climate was nicer.
Yeah.
The drive was a little bit longer, though, I think.
Yeah. Really, from here, it's about the, it's all just about the same. Oh. It's actually an 8-hour drive to Indianapolis. It was a little 8, 9, 10-hour drive.
It's 10 hours to Milwaukee. Trust me. I know. Well, we just did a 9.5-hour drive.
Oshkosh. And I think it's an easier drive from here to Indianapolis.
Well, it's a straight shot all the way through. Yeah, no taking crazy little tiny roads and stuff.
But, Tracy, you came in from Ohio, so you only had like a 3-hour drive in.
Yeah, 3.5 hours.
Lucky bastard.
The problem with it was that it was short enough that I wanted it to be done as soon as I left.
Uh huh.
So I was sitting out there and I'm just like, I could be there by now. Why am I not there yet?
Why am I still on the road?
This sucks.
Yeah.
I'm still driving.
Well, and Gen Con kicked off on, we're recording this on Friday,
it's
August
13th.
Friday the 13th, knock on wood.
That's not real wood. Oh, wait, yes it is. Never mind.
It better be.
For the price we paid for this table, it better be.
The con kicked off last Thursday, a week ago last Thursday. And now, Tracy, you were telling me that the exhibitor hall didn't strike you as big as you thought it was going to be, right?
Well, when I was talking to people at Origins, they were the one at Gen Con is 3 times as big, and it was bigger, no doubt. I mean, it helps that there were the big booths there. From, you know, like Catalyst had a huge booth there, sort of Watsi, sort of Paizo. And the biggest booths at Origins were the main for Games in the Rio Grande, because those are the two main sponsors of that one.
Right.
It wasn't so big that it was unmanageable. One thing that was interesting about its layout versus Origins is that the art exhibits and everything are part of the dealer's hall at Gen Con, where it's a totally separate room at Origins.
Now, it used to be a different room.
Yeah, that changed.
The art hall used to be completely separate.
It used
from
to be
the,
separate,
the
and then they expanded into the fourth hall,
and they added the anime room, and then they had the creepy anime room.
There is no more creepy anime room. There's just the creepy anime hotel now.
So there's
I really like being able to walk across the hall and go watch anime where, you know, and Nathan can just be across the hall.
I'm going to go ahead and come out and say it. I must be a creepy old man, because I walked into the West End, which is where all the anime events were, and I was creeped out by everyone who was there. I was like, oh my God, that girl's like 12 and wearing less clothing than, oh my God, I need to gouge out my eyes.
When it's closer to the exhibit.
Yeah, that was a little bit I ran into that a few times myself. It's like, oh look, Wonder Woman, that's not a Wonder Woman, that's a Wonder.
Yeah.
She really was anywhere from probably 9 to 32. Though
oddly, I didn't see any. I didn't see any chainmail bikinis.
Chainmail bikini,
this year.
Not wearing underwear. Yeah.
In fact, I didn't see a lot of costumes this year that were really like
not wearing
undergarments. Costume, but
yeah. That always was just disturbing. It's
doesn't
like,
that chain?
Yeah. And you're looking. You're going. Those. That's. Yeah, we're not supposed to see that through the chainmail. You either need to increase the rings on your chainmail, or you need to wear something underneath that chainmail top. We should not be able to see that.
Yeah, so I don't know about you, Tracy. I didn't see any chainmail bikinis this year, as they are the thing at Gen Con.
I think I saw one.
Okay.
Was it on a guy or a girl?
Yes, the question is, was it a man or a woman? Or miscellaneous?
Unknown.
It was a woman.
So, okay.
Actually, the best chainmail outfit I saw was a guy that had, he was wearing a smiley face, like, boxers over smiley face pajama bottoms, and then had a chainmail top on with like smiley face painted on.
Nice.
It was a guy?
It was both creepy and awesome all at the same time. Yeah, it was a guy.
Yeah. The costumes I managed to see, there was a guy, the guy running my the Marvel Superheroes game I played in was dressed up as Tony Stark. And he had a brandy sifter and everything like that. It was great. He was not trying to win any awards. He was just dressed up for the event, I think. But that was a lot of fun. I saw there was some Wonder Womans. I saw a really cool Cobra Commander was running about. There was a couple different Solid Snake running around. Even Snake. one guy carrying a box with him too.
Yeah, they were carrying their boxes. I walked by one Solid Snake with one of the villains from one of the various iterations of that game.
Yeah, it's
It's awkward to carry around now. He was like, pull the box up.
Yeah, I was looking at that guy walking down with the big box, and it was a big cardboard box with Super Smash Brothers painted on the side, you know, so it's like a Super Smash Brothers game. And I was like, that must have seemed like a great idea until you actually got here.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, I have to lug this thing around now?
Damn it.
Moron. Anyway. I had a game going on Saturday from 2 to 6, so I really didn't get to see any of the costumes that were running around, which is too bad. Sometimes you can get some really cool. They're really cool costumes that are out there, but.
You mentioned the games. That was probably the mm-hmm. biggest difference between Origins and Gen Con is, other than running in the DM's Gauntlet on Thursday,
mm-hmm.
and then that deadline set for you guys on Thursday night. Other than booth demos, I didn't do any gaming.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the exhibitors hall almost the entire time. Just
yep. Yep.
Taking the sites, talking to people, you know, some business cards. It felt like I was working, you know, way more than I did at Origins.
Mm-hmm. And you also seemed a bit more comfortable. You sounded like you were a bit more comfortable handing stuff out, you know, schmoozing this time around rather than you were at Origins.
Yeah,
the more you do it, the easier it gets.
Have a business card to hand them, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to say, as far as Gamers Haven, it was a pleasure to meet a lot of fans that were out there. I had a few fans come up to me at the meet and greet and talk to me. I did find that we got a lot more people are starting to at least recognize us, which is nice. And we went to the Ennies for the first time this year, and that was actually a lot of fun. Went there with the AGC guys, and somebody started a bet. I don't know. I'm not naming names, Tracy, but...
Hey, it was my fault.
Uh-huh. It was your fault. We started a dice bet on because AGC did an Ennies show, and then we did an Ennies show, and we both called out winners, and so we wrote them all down and then compared basically as the show went on, and if they got one right, if they got one right, we got one wrong, we passed them a die. If they got one wrong, we got one right, they passed us a die. We ended up being dead even, six correct each, and then eight that were either ties or none of us got it. So, and it was definitely, the Ennies were a year of the Pathfinder. Pathfinder walked away with pretty much everything.
We did mention that was probably going to happen.
Yes. I think the best quote from the night has still got to be, we'd like to thank Pathfinder for not being nominated for this award. And I can't remember who said that, but that was funny. By far the best line.
So I take it they won the map award and everything, didn't they?
Yeah, that's not our best writing or something like that. I can't remember.
It was the best writing.
Oh, man. Yeah, but that was a lot of fun. But I think...
And, by the way, we have the permission to post the audio from it.
Oh, good, good, good.
And these folks got back to me, so...
Good. Yeah, so we will have the audio for that up. And I've got... we're going to have releases going up for the next week as far as for Gen Con stuff, and that doesn't include all the stuff that you just sent me, Tracy. So we are going to have a ton of Gen Con audio to put out, including some seminars and whatnot, and I managed to record all the game sessions I was in. So I got the Marvel Super Heroes game, I got the Mutants and Masterminds game, and I got the Deadlands game that you ran.
So how was the Mutants and Mastermind?
It was good. Well, it was second edit. It wasn't the new edition. But it was still really good. We had a lot of fun. It was a living campaign. So it was like an ongoing story that a bunch of people do. and it's a continuing story from con to con.
Oh, okay.
And so that was actually a lot of fun. I played Ultraman, who was pretty much like a Superman analog. That was a lot of fun.
I still like my character, Spitfire.
Spitfire! Yeah. But other than all that, I think my impressions on Gen Con this year were I thought it felt that the show ran real smooth for me anyway. Ran smooth for... I didn't really hear of any huge snafus or any more than normal. There also really wasn't any huge release for Gen Con this year, whereas there has been in years past.
Dark Suns.
Yeah, Dark Sun was a... It was,
yeah, but that
it
was
big, but it's not... You know how... You know, it's there's always something that's on everybody's list to get, and it's this huge thing.
Wasn't that Mutants in the New Mutants and Masterminds book?
Not really, no. I mean, it wasn't the buzz of the con. That wasn't the yeah. talk of the exhibitor hall.
There were a lot of not second tier, but just sort of mid-major releases. I mean, you had, like you said, you got Mutants and Masterminds, Dark Sun.
Yeah.
Paizo had the Advanced Players Guide coming out. You had a bunch of Dresden stuff. Mm-hmm. All around, but that was. I mean, there were a lot of different things.
Yeah.
From a lot of companies that people were talking about, but there wasn't that heavy hitter.
Yeah, and it really reminded me of the Gen Con years before D20. So you had a lot of other stuff, you know. And
yeah,
there
it's
really
kind of nice to see that again.
It is nice to see the industry is evolving. Which is nice to see. It's sort of going back to what it was like, but it's still sort of there, as you still have this rabid fan base of D20 and 4th edition out there. But you have other companies who are basically like, well, we're just going to do our own thing again, which is, I think,
Cubicle
awesome.
Cubicle 7.
Cubicle 7's been knocking it out of the park.
Crap, Cubicle 7. Yeah, how many games were nominated?
Six or seven, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
They had a bunch nominated for Game of the Year. Tons of stuff.
Really impressive for one conglomerate publisher like that to have that many titles under their belt. So.
Yeah, and I have it on good authority that they have several licenses that they've lined up that they're not talking about yet, but some very cool licenses. So I don't know what, but you know they've got some stuff that they're going to be coming out with apparently. But I mean they're the guys who do the. Actually, what Jeremy's going to be reviewing today is the Hellfrost Bestiary and whatnot. Is that's all Cubicle 7 stuff. They do the Doctor Who RPG and Atomic Highway and all that stuff. So, Tracy and I also found ourselves being drawn to the Savage Worlds booth all the time.
It has a gravity of its own.
Yes, it did have a gravity of its own. I got to hang out a bit with... Shane Hensley, although you got to hang out for a good 40 candid minutes with Keith Baker.
That was so random and so awesome that happened, but yeah, it was cool. A buddy of mine from Origins, I ran into him on the street and went and got a drink. He's like, hey, Baker's going to be in this hotel lobby just talking to people you want to come. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a no-brainer.
Yes.
I said the Wall Street call for and let him talk.
Nice. Excellent. He's a freelancer, I believe, so he doesn't actually work for WotC. Yay, that means that to get him on the show, I don't have to go through Porter Novelli.
Which is the
PR company, PR firm for Wizards of the Coast.
Which
don't believe in podcasts.
Well, tell them about the snafus they did run into, like the WotC and the Dark Sun.
Oh yeah,
that was crap.
As everyone knows, I'm a huge Dark Sun fan, so I went there and I was like planning on buying the Dark Sun books. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, I want to buy Dark Sun. What Wizards of the Coast neglected to advertise is the fact that either they only brought 400 copies or they were just limiting themselves to 100 copies a day. Either way, they were only selling 100 copies of the game a day, and so by the time I get there, I think it was on Friday, they're like, oh, we sold our quota for today, you'll have to come back tomorrow morning, and I'm like, I'm in a seminar.
Hey, wait a minute, lying. Come on, guys.
And I was more annoyed that they, I mean, here I am looking up at their shelf, and there's a copy of the book right there.
And they won't sell it to you.
And it's like, okay, I understand the whole quota thing, but you guys could, you know, make mention of this. It's kind of stupid. So I basically turned right around,
I want that book.
Called up Phil at Tabletop, was like, So, when those Dark Sun books coming in, put my name on those three, would you please?
I had a similar thing happen at the Sandstorm booth, but it wasn't a bad thing, just because the movie they handled it.
Uh-huh.
The card game they published called Pooh won the Origins Award for Best Card Game.
Right.
And it was selling like crazy. So when I went to the booth and I inquired about it, they said, no, we're currently constipated. We're going to laxative at 4, and we'll have more Pooh available then.
Right.
Whoa.
I mean, it just, it's
funny.
It's the same situation, but it...
But yeah, they handled it much better.
The way that is not jerky.
Yes, and I think the biggest epic fail of the con, from what I understand, though, is White Wolf had a booth, but no product.
What?
White Wolf had a booth, but
why the Smurf were they at the show if they didn't have anything to sell?
I don't know the specifics behind it, but I was told, I never actually saw their booth. That's how, you know, it's like, well, they're supposed to be over here, and I asked, like, does White Wolf have a booth? It's like, yes, they do, but they have no product to sell.
It's not like we'd be buying
it. So it could be a shipping thing. It could entirely just be White Wolf being dumb. Who knows? But that was the big fail of the con, as far as I know.
My guess is it was probably shipping, because shipping has been really fail lately. I've shipped, in the last 2 months, I've shipped probably 50 things out to people selling old computers and stuff to make my car insurance and stuff. You know, selling off my old stuff that I prefer to keep but don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And I've had one package utterly destroyed. I've had four go missing for weeks. I've had seven that arrived 4 days after they were slated to arrive on the guaranteed and had to go fight with them to get my shipping money back because people wanted it by a specific time. So, yeah, shipping has been a nightmare for the last 2 months. So, and my guess is if they showed up with no product, unless they were being absolutely smurfing retarded, they were like, well, it was supposed to be here, and UPS or FedEx went, we're sorry, we shipped that to Burundi.
Woohoo! Wait, no. Not woohoo. All right.
We have a booth.
Well, Tracy, what is it? What did you get from? Did you see anything at Gen Con that knocked your socks off that you just have to talk about?
There were a few things that I came across that I'm really, really excited to be looking at. I got some stuff to review for Phone in the Corner, and one of those is something, I think you mentioned it before we went on the air, is Outbreak Undead.
Mm-hmm.
It is it's an indie RPG, it's self-published, and it is basically any type of zombie game or zombie movie you can think of, from types of zombies to setting to whatever, you can use the rules to play that way. And a quiz you can take online. Apparently some psychologists from UCLA helped put it together, and it actually, after answering the questions, you can play yourself in the zombie game. The book itself is gorgeous. It's set up like a survivor's journal.
And it's a black and white interior book. And it's still really nicely done, especially now in this day and age of where you're used to getting the full color interior books nowadays.
I don't really care for full color interior. It usually jacks the price up by $15.
Sometimes it's worth it. DC Heroes Handbook. DC Heroes Handbook.
That's
Green Room.
Yeah, but their book's $40.
Uh huh.
Yeah, other companies when they go full color charge $50 or $60.
Yep.
So I don't mind Green Ronin, because Green Ronin keeps their prices fairly level, because their black and white books are, you know, $24.99.
How much was the Outbreak Undead book?
I believe they were charging between $40 and $50.
It's independent. And they self-published too.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
independent self-published. The cost for them to publish is going to be so high.
But it was very nice layout. I really want to get my hands on a copy of that.
So that's one, and basically, you know, also on the full color, you know, whatever, I'm thinking of the right analogy, and I'm missing it right now, but anyway, on that same note, Eclipse Phase, which has been racking up awards left and right. I finally had a chance to crack open the book a couple of days ago, and oh gosh, it is.
Yes, I've got it, and I haven't had a chance to look at it myself yet, so.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous book. I'm loving the setting so far, which I'm 46 pages into the book, and all it is setting, which
Ooh, nice.
Is a thumbs up in my opinion, because I know they use their own your own mechanic for it, but it does not get in the way of the goodness that is the setting so far.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and then I did just review Advanced Player's Guide for Troll in the Corner, and I was
for Pathfinder
impressed by that book. Yeah, I read just about every splat that WotC put out for 3.5, and we all know how hit or miss you know those can be. I think the Advanced Player's Guide is probably one of the best player supplements that I've come across. So those are probably the big three that are sticking out to me as of right now.
Excellent. I think Outbreak Undead was very cool. I was very happy you showed that to me. I was really jonesing over Iron Dynasty from Reality Blurs. It's new Savage World setting, a samurai steampunk setting. Looked very cool, but everyone knows I'm a sucker for that whole Asian thing, and this, you add steampunk into it, and I'm like, oh, sold. And it's Savage World, so hey, you know, I'm there. That was very cool. It came out at Gen Con. I finally got a chance to flip through and take a look at Cthulhu Tech, and it looks really cool.
Told ya.
It looks very neat. That'll probably be one I'll try to run it for one of the one-shot play reviews at some point. It really, I think, other than that, that Outbreak Undead was really cool, and I think it was by far one of the most impressive indie things I saw. The other cool thing I saw were those the Iron Die people selling the Iron D6s.
Oh yeah, those were nice.
They were a little pricey. It's 9 of them for $25, but
they're metal. Metal is expensive.
They looked really neat. I could care less about, because they sell them in sets of 96, and it comes with its own game you play, its own dice game. Mm-hmm. I could give two whole smurfs about the dice game, but the dice themselves looked very cool. We'll wait to see after it sort of has had a run in my dice bag to see if any of the paint chips off or any of that, or if it's dyed or whatnot, to see if they also, you know, destroy things. We'll see. But they look very cool. I also got a set for my brother. Really, I think my impression as far as just being a guy who'd been to Gen Con on numerous occasions was you sort of realize Gen Con is more about selling you stuff than actually playing games anymore, which, you know, I've grown to expect that, and I go to Gen Con expecting that, so ultimately, you know, I'm fine with that, and it's much more of an industry-type show now for me. I was very happy to be able to play the Marvel Superheroes RPG for the first time in 15 years. That was still a lot of fun. Ironically, I don't think we actually played it entirely correctly because the guy running it wasn't too familiar with the rules, and I was actually going, no, I think it works this way. No, I think it works that way, but play it however you want. Really, ultimately, we had a lot of fun. I got to play... you played two different characters in the game, one at the beginning, one at the end, and then both at the... One at the beginning, different one in the middle, and both characters at the end. And I played Colossus and then Marvel Girl. I got to toss Wolverine as a fastball special at a Sentinel and hit it.
Sweet.
Really well, too. I got to pound the living crap out of a Sentinel's Colossus. That was fun. I got to pick up a shipwrecked ship in the off the coast of Australia and hefted up on shore. That was amusing. Marvel Girl, actually it was kind of funny because Saylin was playing in it with me, and she was playing Cyclops at that point, so she was my boyfriend. Which is amusing. But it was a fun game. We had a lot of fun with that. And the Mutants and Masterminds game, like I said, was that living campaign, and then obviously the Deadlands game that Tracy here ran. I had a lot of fun with that, and I hope that you have a sequel for that made at some point.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can definitely have that ready. I had a lot of fun running that. It was my first successful Deadlands session. First time I ran it for my group here, I did not know the Savage World rules.
Yeah,
Savage World rules well enough to. They got murdered by a guy in Coffin Rock.
Yes.
Guns versus pickaxe, and the pickaxe won.
He ran the Coffin Rock scenario, and they got killed by the guy in the assayer's office.
With a pickaxe?
He just had a pickaxe.
Killed him with a pickaxe. Yeah. That was fun.
What was their was his parry skill real high or something, so they couldn't shoot him?
No, I was, when they were shooting, I wasn't having them roll for it. I was always having them roll for his parry, and they couldn't roll for grab that day.
Were they in close combat, so they had to roll against his parry?
No, they didn't have to. They were backing up 5 feet. They just couldn't hit him.
They couldn't even roll a four. Man, that sounds like my rolling.
No, and see, that's the thing, is even though they were 5 feet away...
He still had him shooting against his parry, because he didn't...
It was an accidental, just not knowing the rules.
He wasn't familiar... Tracy wasn't as familiar with the rules.
Oh, I thought they had to be more than...
No, if you're adjacent to him, then it's versus their parry. If you're more than one space away, then it's just target number four.
Yeah, and there's been days when it's like, I need a four, I got a two, and a one!
Wow, I suck.
I rolled double ones on my firing roll. Crap.
I shoot myself in the head again.
Darn it. I just filled in that last hole into the brain pan.
I just want to do that. Why don't, Tracy, before we wrap up the discussion, I want to tell us about your DM's gauntlet that you went through.
Oh, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. It was run by Iron Player.
Uh-huh.
And it was the setup where I was supposed to DM three separate groups. The first two through the same adventure, but one side as good players, the next group as evil players. And then for the last one, two different groups would be meeting in a head-to-head battle where they could attack each other as well as the big bad monster that was trying to kill all of them.
Mm-hmm.
My first group took an hour and a half to get their characters ready.
Oh, jeez.
3-hour slot. Just started playing them. It's a lot of fun. But that was a bit of a snafu. And then I moved to the second group, and it turns out most of the playing groups were supposed to be playing on the player side of the tournament, so they're moving through all three of these sessions that I just described.
Uh-huh.
Turns out you could buy tickets for just one-third of the action.
Oh, yeah.
And so I get to my second table, and the group is packing for a meeting. So I ended up running the second group. It was a group of the judges. They just grabbed, three or four people and sat down, and I ran them through it. And then for the last one, apparently, and you could also one-shot the last battle on the two groups that were there who would have been rating my performance, because, I mean, could win. I could have won prizes and such. The two groups who were there didn't have any way to rate my performance. So, the actual DMing was really fun. I had a really good time doing that. But the organization probably could have used some work. The only thing is, I can't complain too much because it's one of those setups where I'm not sure you could have predicted all of that would happen to one person out of everyone who participated. So I talked to the judges afterwards, and they were really cool, and they were really understanding about how it all went down. And I might be giving them some help next year with getting everything set up. So it was a worthwhile experience. It made for a great time Friday. Because I actually, it was like being at CanCon. I GM'd for almost 10 hours straight when you consider the session we played afterwards. So.
And despite all that, you made it to third place, didn't you?
Yeah. I think I asked them, because they only scored the top two, and I scored 27 out of 30 on my GMing. So I was pretty pleased with that. That was a fun.
I have to work on those 3 points next year.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I think overall, I mean, my final thoughts on Gen Con was a lot of fun. I walked 15 miles while I was there. That was what the pedometer said at the end of the 4 days.
What did you eat?
What did I eat? I ate whatever the heck I wanted at that point. We went to the Alcatraz Brewery, the Ram on the last day. The Ram Brewery on the last day, Steak and Shake. There was a really nice restaurant in the hotel, the Pullman, which was nice. I didn't mind it at all. They were really busy that one night we went there, though, but That's okay.
Yeah, there were, what, 20 tables, and there was the one overworked waitress?
One waitress, yes, poor, that poor lady.
One waitress?
One, yeah, we were, I gave her, I honestly, I gave her a good tip, so.
That poor waitress.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say she deserved a pretty, yeah, pretty big tip.
I gave her a nice tip, because it's like, yeah, you, yeah, that sucks. But, you know, overall, I had a lot of fun. It was what I was expecting it to be, and, you know, I'm looking forward to going again next year, and hopefully,
yes,
you know, seeing everyone again and yeah, having a good time.
I have to say, I do wish that press passes got in for free.
They do.
They do?
Mm-hmm.
We can't get a press pass, though, can we?
Yeah, they got to get a press pass.
Two press passes, one for me, one for Salem.
Mm-hmm.
When you get a press pass next year, all I got to do is pay for the room.
Uh-huh.
All right, time to donate the kidney.
You only need one.
Yeah.
Half.
I will say that in hindsight, though, I understand, Jeremy, what you were saying, that it's not necessarily your thing. I can see how the convention, if you're not around that many people that long, it's definitely not for everyone. It's awesome if you can buy into the full experience.
Honestly, it's amazing that I've made it ever, because I actually have, I have a phobia of crowds.
Of people I don't know. So well, the fact that I've made it and actually gone to it's pretty impressive, because I usually freak out in situations like that.
Also, my urge to buy is triggered at that point, and that burns out fairly quick. But you could give me
a
few thousand dollars a day, and I would just be blown through that.
Uh-huh. You can spend a lot of money.
But that's why I like...
Yeah, the first Gen Con I went to, I think I took $2,200 with me, and I came back with $7,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I'm like,
granted, $400 of that was for the room.
Gen Con has its place, but it's not. I like CantCon because it was gaming.
Yeah, that was one of the things that really was a bummer to me the first time I went to Gen Con. When I first went to Gen Con, there were tons of games.
Mm-hmm.
The year after
the first time we went, it was run by TSR.
Yeah, 96,
and they were very much game oriented. You know, and then Watsy took over, and then Andon took over. When Watsy took over, it stayed about the same, but then Andon came in, and they
and
really
97. What
it.
Happened was is 97 when they did the con for the first time. The first thing they did was they changed the way the pricing worked. And what happened was is TSR, if you ran so many games, you got in for free.
Yeah,
because you didn't get to do much anything else. And when Wizards of the Coast took over, they said no, you get 10% off. And so they went from having something like 40,000, like not 40,000 games, but a massive chunk of games listed. They had less than a third of those games running when the con actually happened, because the GMs all dropped out, because it's like, well, if we're going to have to pay to get in,
mm-hmm.
and we don't get to do anything other than run games, I'm not paying to run games for someone else.
Yep, yep.
And so they left. And it took years for that to come back.
It was...
Because there for a couple of years, there was nothing. It was dead.
And then Gen Con sort of became its own thing, separated from WotC, and has sort of gone that E3 Comic-Con route. And where it does more, it's more about the seminars, workshops, and the exhibitor hall. Which is fine. I mean, that's what I expect when I go, and you know, it's not for everybody. I think if someone like say wants more of a gaming con, they can go to CantCon here in Kansas City.
We will have some exhibitors, but
yeah,
it's
but
not going to be like
game
like Gen Con.
You're going there to game. That is the whole key.
Yeah.
That is the whole point. Whereas Gen Con, I was going there to buy stuff. I knew entirely I was going there to buy stuff.
And schmooze,
yes.
Which,
and I was successful.
That's fine, yeah. Schmoozing's
fine.
All in all, Gen Con, thumbs up. I had a good time. I'll definitely be going back next year. Tracy, I think you're hopefully going back next year. Yes?
Yeah, definitely planning on going back next year. Going to remember to take afternoon breaks on the first few days instead of waiting until the third.
That's a big thing. Yeah, that is a big thing. I think you pointed that out while we were there, is to give yourself some time just to
relax.
And don't book yourself solid, you know.
Yeah, because you have to. The reason why that's never been a problem for Beck and I is usually because it's the only vacation we get in the year. So it's like we don't do anything at any sort of speed.
See,
it's like we go where we want, do what we want at the times that we want.
If I knew there was a bunch of other things also to do, it might not be a bad vacation.
Well, they have
to
tons
be like,
of different things to
well,
do.
Yeah, but I'd have to get it planned, you know. It would be nice to kind of have a vacation where, okay, I go to, you know, Gen Con for a little while, and then go out to the zoo or then, you know, come
have you
back
been to the Indianapolis Zoo?
Yeah, the Indianapolis Zoo is nice. Fairly close to the convention center.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. They were one of the first zoos in the area, in that area that actually successfully bred pandas, which was kind of cool.
So that would be
and they let
more
them loose
me
at Gen Con.
I mean, yeah, that would be something more for me.
Well, at least you didn't have to worry about the panda funk.
We, we're going to go ahead and wrap this discussion up. We will be back right after this.
The Wandering Geek Podcast. We get to talk about MMOs and board and card games, DVDs, and everything else geeky for those road warriors out there, right?
Yeah, and for other geeks with limited time on their hands, which these days is just about everyone. And there's a special topic we cover each episode, too. The Wandering Geek Podcast.
At www.wanderinggeek.com.
And over on iTunes, too.
How do you get your geek on?
The Gamer Story.
And we are back, and today on the three-parter, we're going to be talking, I've got a gamer story to go on about, and Jeremy and Nathan both have some reviews to do, so we're going to go ahead and kick it off with a gamer story.
The Gamer Story.
My gamer story sort of revolves, since this is sort of a Gen Con episode. My first Gen Con that I went to was about 14 years ago. It was in Milwaukee. I'm going to tell you the story of the hotel I stayed at. My first year at Gen Con, we stayed at a hotel in Milwaukee called The Ambassador, which was a hotel that was probably built in, you know, the early 1900s. And we're pretty sure that the staff that worked there
was
the same staff that opened it in 1900. It was about, I want to say it was a good 20 blocks, 20 or 30 blocks from the convention center. So they had a shuttle service that would take us from the hotel to the con, and then that would, you know, pick us up at intervals and take us back. I remember distinctly that the hotel was next to a Taco Bell that had an on-duty police officer there all the time, which was interesting. Now, the hotel itself really would have lent itself very well to, like, a Call of Cthulhu LARP or something like that.
Because it was definitely 1920s style.
Because it was very 1920s style, very creepy place. But when my brother and I got there, the hotel put us in the wrong room. And then they realized that they put us in the wrong room and moved us to the correct room. And then later on in the weekend, someone who was looking for the party that was in the other room came to our room at 3 o'clock in the morning and started banging on the door. He was very drunk. And in the room at the time was me, my brother, one of our friends, Daryl, who was a bodybuilder. And so, you know, this guy's banging on the door at 3 a.m. And Daryl, you know, goes, "You've got the wrong room. Go away." But, you know, and it's just like big, scary Daryl doing this. And the guy eventually goes and gets the security guard, which is, you know, some tottering old 400-year-old man, who you know, knocks on the door. We open it, and, you know, it's like, "Take a look at us. We're not your friends. You have the wrong room. Go away." And the security guard's like, "Alrighty. Well, then, you need to go away." Then the piece de resistance, another guy that came up with us that year was a guy named Jim. He was Big Jim. Jim is a about 6 foot, maybe 6.5 foot tall guy, 6'4", 6'6". He's just a very tall, big, burly guy. On Sunday morning of the convention, or on Saturday night of the convention, he had been out partying until, you know, last call. So he comes back to the hotel, and he's outright smashed drunk, passes out, you know, completely out of it. We wake up in the morning, and there's, you know, 6.5 foot tall Jim passed out on the floor. So we do what any good gamer does, and we shower, do our thing, step over him, and go to the convention center. From what I understand, though, at about 9 o'clock in the morning, 9 or 10, pounding on the door of the security guard who's like, you guys need to leave your room. You're supposed to check out. Yes, you're supposed to check out today, and we had the room through Monday. So they obviously had us confused again with this other room. So Jim, who's 6.5 foot tall, has a horrible hangover, just goes, go away, go away. And finally, the security guard opens the door to a 6.5 foot tall Jim with a hangover who just looks at him and goes, you have the wrong room. We have the room through Monday. Now,
Smurf,
off. And the security guard goes, you can just talk to the front desk. I'm going to go. and walks off. Now, the funny part of this whole thing is Jim... My recollection of Jim. Jim now lives down in Florida. Jim, 6.5 foot tall. Jim bought a broadsword at Gen Con. Mm. He broke the fluorescent light in the hotel room by doing the Conan swinging the sword around in the hotel room. And then apparently on the drive back, because he drove back with our buddy Aaron and his girlfriend at the time. Apparently drove into a rainstorm at a bus stop or at a truck stop and got out of the car at the truck stop with the sword, shirtless, and started swinging the sword around. Now, I can only imagine that these people at this truck stop looking out into the rain, or the people driving down the highway, see this half-naked man swinging a, you know, 4.5 foot long
sword.
Steel sword in the air.
Probably singing the Conan the Barbarian theme to himself.
And I'm quite honestly surprised that they didn't get arrested. But that was my experience at my first year at Gen Con. So, Tracy, I hope your first year was not that interesting.
Not quite that interesting, no.
So you didn't break any lights or anything like that? You know, you didn't, you know...
Yeah, no broken lights.
Okay,
no.
Okay.
No, there was that... I'm not
going to
talk about that on the air. So, no, it was not interesting.
We don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that.
Well, that's my gamer story, and I'm sticking to it. And we're going to move on to a review.
The review.
Hello, everyone. I'm going to be doing a review today, and the product I'm going to be reviewing is released by Steve Jackson Games. It's called Zombie Dice. It's a very quick little game. To give you an idea, it comes with a giant cup with 13 dice. And the goal of the game is that on the dice there are three different symbols. There's a symbol of feet, a symbol of what looks like an explosion, and a brain. Your
brains.
Goal in the game is to get as many of those brains as you can, Per roll. If you get three of the blasts, it means you've been shotgunned three times, which means your turn is over. If you get shotgunned three times, then you lose any brains that you've accumulated. The little feet symbol means that the victim you're after ran away, got away from you. The goal is in as however many turns it takes, and this is it can do up to, you know, I think it's like up to 10 players, I think is what they say. 2+ players. The goal is to get to 13 brains devoured. You can go all the way up to 13 dice if you want, and if you're lucky, you can get up to 13 brains in one roll. Good luck on that. My first roll and the first turn, I got 3 shotguns out of 3 dice. By this point, Becca already had 4 brains.
I see that looking at these, you have green dice, yellow dice, and red dice. What's the difference?
The difference is the difficulty of the victim. Greens are simple, which means there's more brain symbols on the dice.
How do you determine what your victim is?
Your victim? Okay, what you do, take the cup, put your hand over it, shake the cup, and now reach in and randomly grab 3 dice without looking.
Okay.
Now roll those 3 dice, and check the symbols.
I got 2 greens and a yellow.
So you have 2 easy victims and a moderate victim. So
I got 2 brains and a shotgun blast.
So okay, so the you set those all 3 aside, and you can choose to either continue rolling or finish your turn with that.
Okay.
So if you continue rolling, randomly reach in, grab 3 more dice without looking, take those 3 dice, roll it.
I got, red, yellow, green.
Yeah.
I see
more than likely you're going to get shotgun blasted again.
No.
Okay.
I get a brain and 2 footsteps.
Okay. Now, do you wish to continue going?
No.
Okay, you're going to finish. Okay.
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea, with those 2 feet, if you decided to continue going, you'd take the 2 feet, hold on to those, pull one more die out, because the two victims that got away, you can attempt to get them again.
Nice.
And you continue doing so until you decide to finish your turn. So, as of right now, you have 2 brains. The goal is to get to a total of 13. And when you reach when you reach 13 brains, and everybody else's goal.
If you keep going, and if you get a three shotgun blast, you lose everything.
You lose everything that you built up on that turn. Nice. So the goal is just to get as far as you can, as you can in a roll before without being destroyed. Mm-hmm. When you reach 13 brains, it goes to the next person, and everybody gets one chance to either meet or exceed the 13 brains, exceed your score of 13 to win. If they can't exceed it, but they meet it, then you get one last, like, you know, dead, you know, final elimination round roll. And it's just a really quick, simple game.
Yeah, sounds like it. How much does it run?
It's $13.13.
How appropriate.
With tax, it came to $14.17. So, honestly, after playing it once with Becca, I have to admit, it was probably the best $14 I've spent recently, because usually it's like, oh, I need gas. There's a waste of $15.
Uh-huh.
And this is like, oh, hey, this is like, I talked to Phil about it before I bought it, because I've been looking at it for a long time, and he described it very, very simply and very effectively. Zombie Dice is a beer and pretzels game. Drink a beer, have some pretzels, sit around with your friends, and roll dice. Enough said. If you like dice games like that, I highly recommend you pick it up. It's very affordable. Steve Jackson games almost always are. Check it out. Play it. Get as many people as you can together to play. It says 10 to 20 minutes for a run. That's probably fairly accurate. If you're playing 2 people, it'll probably be faster than that. But, yeah. Check it out. I'm really happy with it. It was, you know, $14.17. Yeah. It was...
Cool.
It was... It's great fun.
Nice.
You can what?
It sounds to me like you could even play Pat, you know, basically you play one round with yourself, you note down what you get, when you quit and you put the dice in, just hand it to the next person. You don't necessarily need to get another set.
No. Actually, what you do is each person only does it. They do it. You do one person, and that person's done. It moves to the next person. You actually don't use multiple sets of dice.
That's nice.
The reason for that being is that would cause all sorts of conflict.
Yeah. But hey, sounds pretty nice game.
But the thing is it's definitely one of those games that's so cheap. You know, if you buy it and you have a good time with it and your friends play it and they have a good time with it, more than likely they're going to go out and buy their own copy each, and it's not going to cause any problems.
Oh, yeah, that's
because,
also...
Yeah.
You're talking $13, so, yeah. And that's it. I mean, it's also not a collectible thing, so no problems there. So,
I read through the rules for the Call of Cthulhu, the card game. You know all those cards that I have? That they work with that.
Yeah, I know.
It's just... It's how many thousands of Call of Cthulhu CCG cards do I have?
Yep.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
I looked at it, and I don't see anybody ever playing that game with me.
Alrighty, well, we're going to come back here with a review from Jeremy.
The review.
Hello, so today I'm reviewing Hellfrost Bestiary, the Savage Worlds edition, and Mr. Paul Wiggy Wade Williams looks like was the writer. I have to say, and I don't have any of the Hellfrost books, but this book is nice. It's a little bit pricey, $35, but the first thing you're going to see is, like, in a store, this book would just jump off
the shelf at you.
The shelf, because you just look at it and
yeah,
the artwork, and also it's raised.
Yeah,
like you can feel
there's
the engraving.
Yeah, it's very nice. Some of the Watsy books are like that. Actually, all the Watsy books are like that, but this one
is beautiful.
It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about the whole Hellfrost setting, but this is one of the NE nominees,
right? And it does have. It's not just a monster book. I mean, it is, but it has additional things. Basically, in addition to monsters, it also has hazards. So, which I think is neat to basically include traps and or environmental hazards within your monster book. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
some of the monsters in here are...
And to clarify, this is for Savage Worlds.
This is for Savage Worlds, right? It is a Triple Ace game. www.tripleacegames.com.
Mm-hmm.
Just opening it up. I mean, this book is just nice to have. If the campaign book is this nice looking, it may be worth whatever it costs. Now, beyond that, though,
mm-hmm.
again, back to that $35, you want to use this book because, again, it's still $35, and art goes
only so far.
But when you open it, you realize that it's printed on wonderful, just...
like magazine gloss paper.
Yeah, magazine gloss paper. Everything's listed out. The introduction is very clear. It introduces treasure tables. It breaks those down for you. It breaks down some ideas for mass monsters and treasures. It gives you the new monstrous abilities. And then it jumps right into the monsters. And you have things... They're all... Well, I don't want to say all. 90% of them are obviously cold... related.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Arctic tick swarm. Just sounds really, really gross, but basically they're like icy ticks that fill a small burst template.
Yikes.
I mean, that's just nasty. Something else they've done in here, though, is they have avatars of the gods. Like avatar of Serkep is the god of gator men. So you can kind of tell that this is definitely a fantasy world, but they're just giving you some of the avatars as actual, you know, villains or whatever. There was one group of creatures in here that were based on the actual elements. They weren't elementals. They were basically based on, like, this one's a chill. Fog-like creatures that float a few feet off the ground. It basically just sucks victims' body heat. They have these little boxes in red where they basically discuss things like alternate rules. They describe demons more, which is something that I... didn't see in the original book. One thing you will notice, though, is they repeat mm-hmm. some monsters from the original book. I think they do that on purpose, but they expand on them.
To you make them more specific to the setting, probably.
There's a whole stinking thing on orcs. I mean, there's so many stinking orcs in this. Dragons. The dragons are cool. And it's just listed out very... It's easy to follow. Even if you weren't sure about running Savage Worlds, this book presents it in a straightforward sort of way. And for the most part, there was only a few things that I saw that you would require the actual book from Hellfrost. But for the most part, you could basically run a icy... Savage Worlds game and just use this and it would be fine. They introduce giants, animals, they have penguins. I mean, that's awesome. Everybody loves penguins. Let's see. I'm trying to find goblins. Here's an example of Hazard. Hellfrost wind, icebergs, ice flows, icicle rain, leech snow, mage storm, quicksand, razor ice, sea blizzard, slush ice. Basically, they've just put everything you need from all levels in your hands. Anything that's a wild card, you'll know because it is a little dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they do with their normal
the Smiling Jack and the core books.
Yeah, I mean, there's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 3-4 pages of stinking orcs, paladins. They do discuss psionics a little bit, very, very briefly. I guess they touch upon that. Overall, I would be hesitant unless you're really... Oh, this is one thing I did want to discuss. Traps. Again, they list traps in addition to hazards, but the traps are based on the deck of cards.
Oh, nice.
And they give you a breakdown for using the traps. This could be used in anything.
Mm-hmm.
That is nice. That is very nice. I like how they've done that.
Basically generate a random trap if you need it, yeah.
Right, and it lists all the things that you need. And then at the back, they have relics.
Nice.
Basically magic items. In this particular world, magic items are very rare, but they do point out some things you can do. They don't give you a lot of examples per se. Like, it's not a D&D book where there's tons of magic items. They just they give you a couple examples and they let you go with it. And that's under the relics chapter, which isn't very long, but and it has an index.
Yay for index.
Now there's artwork everywhere on the back, on the front.
I mean, it's a gorgeous book.
It is a gorgeous book. Now here's the pros and cons. Again, unless you are ready to run a Hellfrost game, price-wise, I don't think this is worth picking up just for a Savage Worlds monster book. It's beautiful, and the monsters are cool, but unfortunately it's $35.
Right.
Now, if you have an extra $35... and either one, you're going to be running a Hellfrost game, or maybe you just like how beautiful it is and want a monster book, hey, go for it. But for me, it's a little pricey. But high quality. So I give them props for high quality. The monsters, the one thing they point out, these monsters are not, they are not put in any particular level. Savage Worlds isn't really about level per se, which they make quite clear. If your players don't run away, sometimes these monsters will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So I would give it, out of like 5, I would give it a 3.5. And the only reason I'm not going with a 4 is the price. Artwork, if it was just artwork standing alone, I'd probably give it a 4. I mean, it's just beautiful.
Cool. Looks like it is available as a PDF for $20.
Yeah, that's a lot more reasonable. Just because while the book is 128 pages, not including the two, you know, back front pages, the extra
cover,
pages,
the inner covers, yeah. Right?
Kind of thin, but they do use up all the space. I mean, even though there's art on almost every page.
Mm-hmm.
They use their space well. I'll give them that. And it's kind of like... It's one thing I've noticed about this company is their items do appear to be pricey, but they have put out good quality
stuff, yeah. But they are a small press. I mean,
right,
so
and that's part of it.
Yeah, so I mean, that answers why it's a $35 book.
Right.
But, I mean, it is a gorgeous book. I mean, I'm just looking at it from here, and...
Oh, yeah. It's just something you want on your shelf.
But yeah, it's just gorgeous. Very nice.
And it's something that we will probably use in Savage Worlds.
Oh, yeah. But, $20 PDF.
Yeah,
looks pretty good, and it's available through Cubicle 7.
Right,
they're the
right.
ones who publish it for AAA games or distribute it for AAA games. So,
I mean, check it out. At least walk up to when you go to Tabletop. When you drive from wherever you live and go to Tabletop.
Go to Tabletop Game and Hobby in Overland Park, Kansas.
I bet if he doesn't have one on hand, he can get you one.
He'll order one, yes.
You can walk in, and if it's there, just hold on to it, open it, look at it, because it is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, cool. We'll be back after this.
Okay, Carol, now you take these notes, and then we're about ready to begin.
Oh, okay, sure.
Well, what are you two doing here? We don't record until tomorrow.
We're making a new promo for All Games Considered, since you were dragging your feet getting one written.
Hey!
She's right, though. It's been too long, and a lot has happened since the last promo.
Yeah, like winning the Gold Ennie for Best Gaming Podcast for 2009.
You mean the one you try to work into the conversation every other episode?
Hey!
Now, there's more than that. There's the new format.
You mean the main show every 2 weeks and the assortment of other features in the meantime?
Right, like games you may never have heard of, the review and news shows.
Don't forget the RPG buffet.
And on the main show, we have more time to focus on gaming topics.
Like board and card games.
And RPGs.
And the people who play them, from the old school to the newest of the new.
But no changeling. Hey!
Find out more at agcpodcast.info. All games considered, because there's more than one true way to play.
We are back, and today on our lovely Random Encounters, we've got no voicemails again this time, so aww. People need to, you know, deal with it and call our voicemail line 877-something or other that I can't remember off the top of my head.
It takes so many of our resources to keep that up and running.
I know, $2 a month, people.
That's a lot.
It's $40 bajillion to us.
Quatloos.
40 bajillion quatloos to us, yes.
Well, it's literally, what, 17,400 lira?
It's a lot. It's a lot. One way, no matter how you look at it, it's a lot. We got an email from, let's see, back on July 22nd, got an email from David Nichols saying, I'm right in the middle of listening to the Nightingale episode for Deadlands. And it's got me thinking about how you've converted the gameplay of Relics and the like from the classic Deadlands to Deadlands Reloaded, like the Splinter of the True Cross and the Pinkerton Dusters. Any advice? I can't believe this story is getting close to being over, or at least that's what it seems from your show descriptions. It's been an awesome ride and so dang complex. I feel like in this episode I need a wiki or something to keep track of all the characters. Dave Nichol. Well, if anyone wants to start a wiki, they can. As far as converting old relics from classic Deadlands, really with Savage Worlds, it's really easy to sort of wing it. The Pinkerton Dusters, it's just I just end up using the flak jackets from or the armored jackets from the Deadlands Reloaded core book. They work just fine. And then just apply their...
To everywhere except your head.
Except your head, yeah. And it sort of works that way for me. The Splinter of the True Cross really was just kind of easy enough to do. You just add the bonus. Being that it's a Splinter of the True Cross, you know, we'll do that.
It can do whatever.
It might not be balanced, it might not be accurate, but meh, it worked. That's a nice thing I think about Savage Worlds is you can basically half-ass it and make it work, so... that's that. Thanks for the email, Dave. Got an email, let's see, from, got a message on, Facebook from, Mr. Aiden M. Maskery.
Whoa, that's a big name.
It is a big name. But, Aiden sent us a message, and I'm going to load it up real quick here on Facebook. As soon as it... There it goes. Hello, my name is Aiden, and I've been gaming since 1985. I really enjoy listening to the Gamers Haven podcast. I most enjoy your role-playing. I consider myself a decent role-player also and wanted to acknowledge the high level of role-playing you play at. Thank you for such an enjoyable listening distraction at work. And you have inspired me to play a swashbuckler after listening to a podcast recently. So, that's cool. Thanks for the kind words. He did write back and said, "Do any of you guys play Dungeons and Dragons Online? I know WoW has been mentioned. If so, which server? Please tell the guys, girls. I really appreciate the time you guys put in. I think we all appreciate hearing that from our lovely fans." I don't think I know I don't play any of that stuff right now, although I have dabbled on D&D Online on occasion.
It was free.
It still is free.
It still is free.
And,
but my
computer's
dead.
I don't know what
server we're on. Well, that'll be fixed as soon as we have a hard drive.
Thelonis.
Thelonis or something like that.
Yeah, because that's the server he's on. So I don't know. If we show up on there, we might look you up.
I'm playing Baldur's Gate now, so I don't really...
Yeah,
Jimmy's like, I'm playing something else that just takes up all my time, so don't bother me.
Baldur's Gate, it's awesome.
Yes, Baldur's Gate. And Baldur's Gate 2 was incredible, too.
Yes.
That's true.
Storylines on it was ridiculous.
But, oddly enough, that's all the emails we got. So, I mean, I can go ahead and turn it over to...
Was the random encounters?
Those were the brief random encounters, although... we've got a couple more people in our chat room. Hi, Dr. Nathan, and hi, of course, Rolling 20s is still... He just exited. We scared him away. Chef Gibbs is still in there, saying, Chef Gibbs, big shout-out to you. Hi, how's it going, Chef Gibbs?
Yes.
We
do want you to call our voicemail right now.
Yes. Call it right now.
Right now, right now.
877-416-1270. That sounds about right. If it's not, then, we'll figure it out. But this is a lot of fun. let's see. Turning it over to the chat room here.
They're just talking about computers.
Okay.
Actually, we're talking about hard drives for you to see if we can find a hard drive for you so we can get your computer back up and running.
Well, there you go.
Because that's the kind of people we are.
I think that's the show. Granted, it was not much room on the show today for much of anything. Really, just talking impressions on Gen Con. Thank you
Chef
Rolling 20s.
He says, "Hang on,
Ethan." Ethan.
Ethan.
Okay.
Ethan.
I was gonna, Dr. Nathan is back. Hi, Dr. Nathan. Tell everyone to go to Munchies for Munchkins on the forums. Okay, everyone, go to the Gamershaven forums, gamershavenpodcast.com/forums, and go to the Munchies for Munchkins section. And he wants, Chef Gibbs wants everyone's best recipes.
He doesn't know about the Halloween stuff yet.
Oh, no. We are doing...
Oh, yeah, there you go.
This year we're doing Gamershaven's first... annual Halloween party, and one of the things that we're planning on doing is a what do you want to call it? I wouldn't call it a competition, but
a contest.
We need Halloween gaming food.
Yeah, what we're going to do is we're doing a contest for best Halloween, Halloween themed.
It's Dr. Nathan.
Treat.
We're Gamershaven is holding a Halloween party come October,
and you're close.
Gaming.
Yeah,
so yes. It's going to be it's going to be I think the weekend of the 22nd.
Recipes.
We're going to shoot for the Friday or the Saturday of that week. It'll be the weekend before Halloween because Halloween ends on a Sunday this year.
I'm boring. I'm not going to wear a costume.
Do we want a recipe or a whole menu?
Recipes.
Not a whole menu because we can't afford to do a whole menu. But if you have some little recipe ideas and some neat little things that we can do, that'd be great.
Halloween party.
I'm thinking something like
we're gonna have open to Gamershaven members. So
like Rice Krispie treats with chocolate or something.
Yeah. Yes. One of the coolest things I've ever done for Halloween, a Halloween themed treat was we baked a cake, a strawberry cake, using food color to change the color of it, and we made a Frankenstein's monster, and we put the Twizzlers pollen peel throughout it as veins and stuff, and put like a fake plastic heart in the middle of it to give it a heart with veins and put lungs on it with frosting and stuff, and cut up this cake and served it to people.
Very nice.
I got it. Someone in my class when I was in high school did it as part of a theme project.
Apparently, Chef Gibbs has an Edgar Allan Poe menu.
Ooh. So quote the Raven Nevermore.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're going to be saying after we eat off this menu?
Does Chef Gibbs know where I can get a Jell-O mold that's shaped like a brain?
I have one.
You have one? How big is it?
Alrighty, then.
It's down in the basement. We can pull it out and you can take a look at it.
Alrighty.
I don't have to go online anymore.
Unless anyone's got anything else, I think we can bring this episode to a close. It has been, as always, a pleasure to our live studio audience that showed up late, but that's fine. We were having a weird change of address and everything, so Spread the word. Next time we're going to have It's All Local on the GamersHavenPodcast.com website on the video stream page. Not much else to go on about. I will. That is really all she wrote. Thanks for listening, guys.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at GamersHavenPodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
That's not canon.